I would like to start by saying that I think queer operates at its most political and as an activity rather than a noun. And for several authors, several voices in Noreen and Eve's book, for Ian Parker, for example, queer is an intervention, a transformation, an interruption. So today I would like to propose a particular use of the verb to queer, and I will make psychoanalysis the object of investigation and queer theory the method. I'm thus proposing a purposefully asymmetric relationship. Through this asymmetry, we can invent new ways of thinking about relationality, about the many and beautiful forms in which a relation between two or several things can present itself to us. I ask how psychoanalysis can queer itself by learning to look more closely at itself in another temporality. By taking queer theory seriously, what is being affected is difference itself. As Jean Houry insists, homogeneity is not merely uncreative, it is incestuous. It means we are failing to make inscriptions of difference, and we are making serial inscriptions of more of the same. This electrifying thought about homogeneity is certainly to hold on to, and Sasha has just helped us in doing so, when we are thinking about different psychoanalytic schools or traditions or institutions, about the relationship between them, and about the structuring of a psychoanalytic mainstream. To further explain my gesture, I side with Caroline Dinshaw, who writes, "I focus on the possibility of touching across time, collapsing time through affective contact between marginalized people now and then, and I suggested that with such a queer historical touch, we can form communities across time. Let us see what the touch of a distant time of psychoanalysis can do to its present time." And thus I look over my shoulder to the Budapest School of Psychoanalysis in 1905 in Budapest, the same year that Freud was writing his first version of the three essays. Sándor Ferenczi, main figure of the Budapest School, presents the text Intermediary Sexual States in front of the Medical Association in Budapest. At this time, Ferenczi defines himself as a neurologist. He has not yet met Freud. We do not hold an English translation of this text. We have a Hungarian and a French version. I pause to say that Ferenczi is a complicated object of memory on which many of the inner conflicts of psychoanalysis as a field of knowledge are played out. In 1933, there was an important split between Freud and Ferenczi after 25 years of intense exchanges. This split had traumatic consequences in psychoanalysis and led to a forgetfulness that lasted decades around Ferenczi's contribution to theory and technique. I believe that acts of turning to Ferenczi are forms of reparation for this traumatic forgetfulness. In 1905, Ferenczi became the Budapest representative of the International Humanitarian Committee for the Defense of Homosexuals, created by the prominent Berlin sexologist Magnus Hirschfeld. Ferenczi signed petitions calling for legal reforms around the criminalization of homosexuality, and he published the talk that we are looking at today. Freud expressed sympathy for this committee, but he did not wish to be associated with the initiatives of legal reform. So in which frame is Ferenczi speaking in this text, Intermediary Sexual States? Certainly in a pre-psychoanalytic frame before his encounter with Freud's texts. He also speaks in a medical frame, but he also speaks where the medical establishment is hopefully assumed to tolerate an intervention, an incision, a political breach, an activist statement in defense of a marginalized and oppressed group. As Ferenczi writes, according to Hirschfeld, himself up by eminent physicians, individuals do not progress towards a determined masculine or feminine type. There exist, in certain cases, certain intermediary forms between the two sexes. In the psychophysiological organization of such individuals, the masculine and feminine traits are intermixed. End quote. Ferenczi speaks of primary sexual traits, genitals, which he analyzes as fundamentally hermaphroditic in nature since the first days of embryonic life, secondary sexual traits, gained by bodies during puberty but occurring in surprising mixes, and remarkably, tertiary sexual traits or the psychological character. This tertiary involves, on the one hand, the subjective lived fantasized experiencing of both primary sexual traits and secondary sexual traits, or we might say the lived gender, and sexual attraction, love, or we might say, with Freud's words, object choice. Although he does place a male and a female character as the two types of this tertiary layer, again, remarkably, a study of many cases shows an extreme variety of these intermediary states, more or less feminine men and more or less masculine women, where the individual sexual being results from a modulation of primary, secondary, and tertiary sexual traits. May I remind you that we are speaking of 1905. What Ferenczi writes is an anticipation of Patricia Gerovici's succinct formulation on sexual difference. Sex needs to be symbolized, while gender needs to be embodied. A secondary extraordinary move in Ferenczi's text is that of shifting halfway through the piece to the term Uranians, the 19th century term to refer to homosexuality. The motivation he gives is that homosexuals themselves have shown resistance and dislike to the term because their subjective experience while in love is not that they love a person of the same sex, but overwhelmingly one of a sex different from theirs. Reverting to the term Uranians would thus resolve this external imposition. Ferenczi also brings in support of his thesis on tertiary sexual traits a letter written by a Uranian. It is a letter of a transvestite who describes the voluptuous but also quite ordinary experience of wearing women's clothes, also making a case that the transvestite's seduction of their object of love is in effect, and if seen from close, no different from the seduction of a man by a woman. There is nothing outrageous about it. Nearly 20 years after, in 1924, Ferenczi brings a striking metapsychological construction that can impact our project of thinking through different forms of relationality. His focus is not on component instinct and instincts, but on the outcome that they can lead to through their encounter, while understanding that this will not be a peaceful, harmonious, or conflict-free encounter. It may be a clash. In his book Thalassa, Ferenczi in 1924 talks about the fusion of different eroticisms containing different pleasurable and painful experiences with different object relations and forms of displacement in a way which transcends any strictly individual horizon of reference. He names the fusion of eroticism amphimixis, a medical term that denotes the mingling of two substances, usually to create a third. In Greek, the prefix amphi means on two sides. There is no unilinear, irreversible, or progressive sexual development of the individual, but rather every act that we might wish to analyze will be a mix of infantile, adult, oral, anal, and genital components. This mix will be unique and irreducible to these components. As I see it, amphimixis is also a Ferencian solution to social synthesis, Amphimixis refers to individuals, but also to their relations. It is through the amphimixis of eroticisms and of partial impulses that any social phenomenon manifests itself. The question that the touching of these three times produces, 1905, 1924, 2018, is how is it to look at something intermediate in a moment that comes before a tradition of critical thinking about the intermediate? What psychoanalysis can learn from queer theory is to make some nearly phenomenological efforts to describe and name intermediary states. In other words, we can bear our patients a metaphor, as well as bearing their own metaphors, as well as making metaphors together for their being in between states when some old form is dissolving and a new form has not yet emerged. The difference between naming and labeling is crucial here. Labeling, of which psychoanalysis is not free, as we know in its dark story of the post-Freudian treatment of homosexuality, both theoretically and institutionally, is a kind of naming ridden with projections, idealizations, reifications. It makes sexuality into a thing. But there exists a naming that is accompanied by meaning-making, by the work of fantasy. This naming is hesitant, circular, or oblique. I end with Ferenczi's words in 1905. I consider homosexuality as an act that has no damaging consequences for society. The repression of homosexuals is unjust and futile. It is possible and necessary to talk about these problems and to write what we think. If we do not do this, we condemn homosexuals of being detained without a profound etiological analysis, in which case we are not equitable judges, but cruel executioners. End quote. Here, we arrive at something that I would call a queer spectrality, at a moment when the affective force of the past can erupt into the present, speaking of a desire from another time, and placing a demand on the present in the form of an ethical imperative. In the name of other intermediary states, we must write what we think. Queering our practice meets us as an ethical imperative. Thank you.